Joining us here at WWDB 860 AM Talk Radio. My name is Reverend Lee West, and I'm your host for A Heart for the People Christian Ministry. We want to thank you for joining us today and being here. We know that it's a beautiful Sunday morning, and we just thank God for another day. Today I want to talk to you. There's no interviews, nobody here but me and some papers. Because this morning I want to speak to you about what's going on in our city and, for that matter, what's going on across the land. We are dealing with a serious problem, a serious situation of gun violence. It seems to be that no matter where you turn, no matter where you're at, somebody is being shot. They're either being killed or they're being hurt. And it's teens, adults, just senselessly killing people. Just senselessly shooting at people just because. We just know that in St. Louis, I think it was yesterday or day before yesterday, two people were killed at a school. What I'm trying to understand is how is it that this young man had 600 rounds of ammunition? 600 rounds of ammunition to do what? It just seems way out there to have that much ammunition. A student and a teacher were killed in that situation, and I do believe that the gunman was killed as well. But these are the times, these are the things that we are facing, and it's not just here in Philadelphia. That was St. Louis. There's been other instances at malls, different places where people are getting shot or shot at. Can't go to the mall without being worried. You can't go to your car without having to look around and see if anybody's watching you. You come out your front door, you got to look both ways down the street, make sure everything is safe before you go outside. We are living in these times, and it is unfortunate because we should not have to live this way. Somebody said that it's a good thing that, you know, the Phillies are going to the World Series, or it's a good thing that the Eagles are 6-0. Sixers have just started out, because it kind of lifts that deadening spirit off of our city and allows people to just breathe and smile just for a little bit. You know, I've been watching a case that's been on the news and on YouTube and what have you, and I've been following it about a man in Wisconsin. His name's Daryl Brooks, and this young man, for whatever reason, was upset and angry and what have you, and took his vehicle and basically ran through a Christmas Day parade, killing, I think, six people have died now. One young person, a child, actually died yesterday. I believe it was yesterday or the day before. But, you know, it makes you wonder what is going through people's minds. What are they thinking? Why is this happening the way it is? I'm just going to give you some stats and some things we're going to talk about concerning this gun violence that's taking place. I know I have a 17-year-old, and when he leaves the house, I'm concerned about when he's coming home and how he's coming home. Sometimes he likes to stay out a little late, and we like to make sure that he's in. But while he's out there, you never know what's going to happen. You don't know what he's going to face. We pray consistently to ensure that, you know, he comes home safely. We don't worry about him actually getting involved in anything or doing anything, but we're concerned about him being a target. We know that our children, you know, the city of Philadelphia has put a curfew in place, and that's great. That's all well and good. But the hours of the curfew a lot of the shootings that are taking place are not during that time. There are, don't get me wrong, there are shootings taking place during that time. But look at the football players who were killed in Roxborough, or the football player that was killed by Roxborough High School after a scrimmage. Right, that wasn't after dark. That wasn't after midnight. There's many shootings that are taking place that are happening right in broad daylight. I watched a video where guys were on ATVs, and the guy just threw a brick through a police car window. And I'm sitting here, and I'm like, how is this happening? You know, so the question is, what do we do? What do we do? I worked as a police officer for the School District of Philadelphia. And one of the things that I learned very quickly is I dealt with the males as they came into the school. And with these males, they had you could tell they had a chip on their shoulder. You could tell that there was something that was wrong inside. And I began to say, I said, Lord, what is it that I can do to let them know that I'm here for them, to let them know that don't worry about the uniform. The uniform doesn't make me, I make it. So later on in that week, I began to shake their hand as they come through the door. I began to tell them that you have a good day. If they had their ROTC uniforms on, I would fix their tie or what have you. But the key to that is not just doing that. The key is being consistent. Now, we can sit here and we can talk about our youth all day long. We can talk about the drug situation all day long. We can talk about the gun violence and gun situation all day long. But until we begin to take action, and there's a lot of organizations out here that are trying to do something, and I applaud them for what they are doing. They're trying to get through to the youth. They're trying to keep them off the street, if possible, playing basketball or chess clubs or whatever the case may be. If somebody is trying to do something, the thing is, these organizations, we cannot do it by ourselves. I have an organization called Parents of Murdered Children, and I am hurt and appalled that there are so many shooting cases that are going unsolved. There are so many cases that are out here. Mothers, it's almost like the families are being victimized over again. Because when you contact a detective or when you contact the district or what have you, we're working on it, or we haven't heard anything as of yet. We're trying to do something. But in the meantime, you have families who are hurt. You have children. When I say children, I'm talking teens who lost a brother or a sister to this violence, and they're thinking about revenge. So the cycle continues. So what are we going to do to rectify this situation? Most non-fatal firearm injuries are treated in hospital emergency departments. Now, I'm going to go back a little bit, and then I'm going to come up to 2022. So from 2007 to 2016, the number of visits to the emergency department for treatment of gunshot injuries was typically highest during the third quarter, which is considered July to September. The lowest during the first quarter, which is January to March. Well, we pretty much know that when it's cold outside, a lot of people they're not going to be outside. January or March of each year, very few emergency departments records indicated that these injuries were self-inflicted. In 2016, over 1,100 persons received emergency department treatment for firearm injuries, over 4.5 times the number of firearm homicides. Now, these are just injuries. These are non-fatal firearm injuries. So in the comments they wrote, it says, the impact of firearm homicides in Philadelphia is greatest among those living in low-income areas and especially among young Black men. Poverty is a well-recognized risk factor for homicide, and approximately one-fourth of Philadelphians live in poverty. The highest proportion among the nation's 10 largest cities. Nationally, suicides account for the majority of firearm deaths. But in Philadelphia, firearm homicides greatly outnumber suicides. While the rate of firearm homicides is higher among blacks and whites, blacks than whites, the rate of firearm suicide is higher among whites than blacks, a pattern that is consistent with national trends. In recent years, there has been an overall downward trend in firearm deaths. This has occurred coincidentally with modest declines in poverty. In addition, there have been many efforts to address gun violence in high-risk neighborhoods involving diverse mixed law enforcement and other government agencies, community-based organizations, and university-based partners. Now, that's all well and good. And there's that's fine. But my thing is this. We have a situation now. We have 6,000 police officers, 2,500 are assigned to patrol. It's impossible to cover this entire city with the amount of gun violence that is taking place. The complaint is police officers are leaving. We're short-staffed. They're going to other departments, or they're leaving altogether. What do you say to that? How do you react to that? What can you do? I can't put on a police uniform and go out there and patrol the city. I can't just carry a gun and go patrol the city if I see something wrong, you know, start shooting. They're saying that the response time for an incident is lowest in brown and black neighborhoods. So the bottom line is not everybody's a criminal. Not everybody's doing something wrong. What do we do? We have all these statistics. We have all these situations that come up. But the question is, what are we doing about it? How can we keep our children, and when I say children, I'm talking 10 and below, from catching a bullet? I have a mother in our group, Parents of Murdered Children. She said her 9-year-old was laying in the bed, asleep, and a bullet came through his window and struck him in the head. So what is it that we need to do? The rate of firearm homicides is highest among those living in the areas with the lowest median household income. Among all Philadelphian residents who died from firearm homicide in 2016, 50% lived in the census tracts with the lowest median annual household income. That means less than $25,000 a year. While only 2% lived in the census tracts with the highest income median household income greater than $52,000 a year. Rate of firearm homicides range from 31.9 to 1.5 per incomes greater than $52,000 a year. 100,000 residents for those living in the lowest to the highest areas, a 21-fold difference. Why is that? Here's the thing that I used to tell people. I want you to drive from Broad Street from City Hall to Cheltenham Avenue. And I want you to take the time to count every bar, every beer place that you see going up the street. That includes the places that sell cheese sticks because now they sell beer. You go to the market, you can buy beer or wine. So count how many places you see on Broad Street from between City Hall and Cheltenham Avenue. Then I want you to cross over Cheltenham Avenue, and I want you to go up to, from Cheltenham Avenue, go up Old York Road or Eastern Road, say to Willow Grove. And then count how many places you see. Certain things in certain areas are just not allowed. Law enforcement is not going to have it. But here and again, you have a large city that is very violent. And like I said, there are police officers out here trying to do their job the best they can. But then you have some who are not. So now we need to understand, what is it going to take to make this happen? What is it going to take to stop our kids from killing each other? The reason I brought up the alcohol and look, it says alcohol and illicit drug use are associated with an increased risk of firearms. Among the 247 people who died from firearm homicides, over half had detectable levels of alcohol or other drugs at autopsy. Among other drugs and pharmaceutical opioids were the most commonly detected. It is unknown how many of these decedents, were using these drugs illegally or illicitly. So this plays a big part. It's nothing to go into a place on Broad Street and get a 40-ounce of beer, tall boy cans or whatever you want to call it, and you drink that, and next thing you know, you're intoxicated. One or two of them or whatever. An argument sparks up, a disagreement sparks up. First thing you want to do is grab a gun. So we need to understand that this plays a big part in it. This is maybe one of the things, you know, cut back on the beer sales, cut back on the alcohol sales. When you look at marijuana and things like that, I'm sorry to say, but that's everywhere. That's everywhere. The homicide statistics represent a daily count. Statistics reflect the accurate count during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, and year-to-date total for victims of homicide, and are subject to reclassification according to the rules and regulations of the FBI. Uniform Crimes Report Guidelines. The homicide statistic years from 2007 to 2018. Have been submitted to the FBI. Now, the key to this that sparked my attention was during business hours. Listen, I don't know where they got this from. As far as business hours are concerned, people are being shot. You rarely hear of somebody being shot between 9 and 5. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but you rarely hear it. But you do hear people, you turn the news on, first thing you hear, so-and-so was shot late last night. There were two kids shot, 13 and 14 years old, at Huntington Park and Roosevelt Boulevard, or Old York Road, at 3:30 in the morning. So are our statistics correct? Are they looking at the real time that these things are taking place? I know most people are asleep when these things take place, but they're happening. And they're not happening, as far as I'm concerned, at the peak of these curfews that they have set. As of October 26th, 2022, as of 11:59 p.m., there have been 439 homicides. 439. Now, around this time in 2021, there's 453. And the number from that point to 2020, 2010, 2019 on down, the numbers kind of get lower. But as of right now, and I'm quite sure something has happened between then and now, but as of right now, October 26, 11:59, there were 439 homicides. Now, how many of them were children? How many? I don't know. I'm not sure. But something has to give. Something has to change. We can no longer continue to make excuses. Our public servants need to step up. When I say public servants, if it's the mayor's office, if it's whoever, something has to be done, because I'm going to tell you something, and this has happened before. People are going to take matters in their own hands if they haven't done so already, because people are getting tired of it. They're getting fed up with it. My block, I have never seen my block so quiet. This summer, kids just did not come out. You shouldn't have to live like that. You should not have to be a prisoner in your own neighborhood, be a prisoner in your own house. Something has to change. So what works? We have policies to reduce gun violence. The use of guns greatly increases the odds that violence will lead to fatality. This problem calls for urgent action. Firearm prohibitions for high-risk groups, domestic violence offenders, persons convicted of violent misdemeanor crimes, and individuals with mental illness who have been adjudicated as being a threat to themselves or to others, have been shown to reduce violence. The licensing of handgun purchases, background check requirements for all gun sales, and close oversight of retail gun sellers can reduce the diversion of guns to criminals. Reducing the incidence of gun violence will require interventions through multiple systems, including legal, public health, public safety, community and health, increasing the availability of data and funding will help inform and evaluate policies designed to reduce gun violence. Not every criminal is going into a gun store and buying a gun. Going somewhere and getting a gun is like going to the corner store and get a bag of chips. Yes, it's just that easy. Why is that? Somebody pull up in a car, open their trunk, they got a trunk full of guns. Which one you want? Pick which one you want. Is it that easy? You pull out a wad of cash, hey, I need this, I need that, and Joe pulls up and you got it. So it's fine that things are regulated in the gun store, but these teenagers are not going to the gun store to buy guns. What works? Gun violence prediction and prevention at the individual level. Although it is important to recognize that most people suffering from mental illness are not dangerous. For those persons at risk for violence due to mental illness, suicidal thoughts, or feelings of depression, mental health treatment can often prevent gun violence. Okay, and that's great, but first you got to get them to the treatment. They have to want to take the treatment. Policies and programs that identify and provide treatment for all persons suffering from mental illness should be a national priority. Urgent attention must be paid to the current level of access to mental health services in the United States, such as woefully insufficient. Additionally, it should be noted that behavioral threat assessments is becoming a standard of care for preventing violence in schools, colleges, and the workplace against the government and other public officials. Threat assessment teams gather and analyze information to assess if a person poses a threat of violence or self-harm, and if so, take steps to intervene. Here's the problem with that. You can evaluate a person, but are you going to evaluate them after the damage is done? After they've already pulled the trigger? After they've already killed somebody? I don't get that. To me, it's too little, too late. These things need to be nipped in the bud earlier on. How many times have you turned on the news and they say, oh, yeah, so-and-so, he, you know, matter of fact, I'll go one better. We have people in our group who lost a loved one to gun violence, and the person that pulled the trigger had been locked up already and got out. Person was locked up in the counties or in another state, was released, came right back out, went right back to killing again or doing whatever they were doing. So it's a cycle, but where does it end? When can we unbutton our collar and say, whew, I'm glad that's over? We need to really begin to look at these situations and really begin to find what we can do. Even at the school district level, as I worked for the school district, we had situations where we lost students who were killed by gunfire. But to them, it's cool. Why is there no kind of education for gun violence in schools, especially now? Why isn't there somebody, whether it's school, church, job, who can stand by and recognize, hey, there's something going on here. There's something not right here. I'm looking at this pattern. I'm looking at what's going on. You know, our children are living adult lives. And we have to be more receptive. We have to be able to step in as adults and say, hey, this is not right. What you're doing is not right. So I want to say to you today that we really need to step our game up. We really need to do something about what's going on here. Too many of our children are dying. Too many loved ones are dying. Too many mothers and fathers are crying. And there's no help. You can have a support group. You can have this. You can have that. But the hurt and the pain is deep. Trust me, I know. My daughter was murdered at 19 years old. What brought me through is my trust and belief in God. But I want to thank you today for being on and listening. Do what you can. Talk to your state reps. Talk to your congressmen. Find out what we can do to prevent this gun violence. My name is Reverend Lee West here at WWDB 860 AM Talk Radio. I just want to thank you for joining me today here at A Heart for the People Christian Ministry. Just remember, God loves you. I love you, but he loves you best. Take care, and God bless. Formed against me, shall prosper.